From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder takes legal action against Texas in redistricting and voter ID.
The state's own data, the Republican Secretary of State's own data shows that people would be discriminated against and be disenfranchised if this law were implemented.
Rick Perry has been against Obamacare, but there are questions about Texas applying for Obamacare funds to help some of the state's most vulnerable.
There's still a lot of ongoing dialogue between the states and the federal government about how it could work.
And why is Texas ready to turn state paved roads into gravel roads?
The legislature, a majority of us, are not excited about this. There's been letters written to TxDOT asking them to set forth the criteria that they are following to determine which roads should be converted.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Thursday, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced that the Department of Justice is suing the state of Texas over voting rights violations with the state's voter ID law. Also, the Department of Justice will be joining a lawsuit over the state's redistricting maps, which critics have called discriminatory. The action by Holder is seen as the latest volley in the ongoing dispute between the feds and the Lone Star State. Governor Rick Perry responded with a brief written statement saying Texas would continue to defend, quote, the integrity of our elections. And Perry said the legal action is an in-run around the Supreme Court. But Texas Democrats welcomed the news. State Representative Trey Martinez Fisher of San Antonio has been a leader for the Dems in the fight over voting rights and recently met with Holder and President Obama at the White House to discuss strategy.
Department of Justice intervening in Texas redistricting and filing a original lawsuit on voter ID was both expected and anticipated. I think that what was very clear to me in my meeting recently at the White House is that the President of the United States was very, very clear that he was committed and his administration was committed to voting rights. This was something that was going to be important to his presidency. And that the Attorney General was very clear that there were still some significant tools left in the voting rights toolbox and that he intended to use them. And today's filing is certainly proof of that.
Like Perry, many of the state's leading Republicans released statements that condemned Holder and defended the party, including Barry Smitherman. He's the chairman of the state's Railroad Commission and a candidate for Texas Attorney General.
It's disturbing because Holder continues to ignore the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in the Shelby County case, which clearly stated that we no longer have to pre-clear our redistricting lines with the Department of Justice because the Voting Rights Act requires a demonstration of present frustration or discrimination against ethnic minority voters, and it is not a test that looks backwards to situations that were in effect in the 60s and 70s. So that holding demonstrates that presently in Texas, there's not evidence of discrimination. There's not evidence of attempts to prevent or thwart minorities from voting. And yet Holder, by this action and the action of several days ago when he said he was going to ask the federal court in San Antonio to require us to pre-clear our lines in spite of the Shelby County holding, that he's just ignoring what the Supreme Court of the land has said about the current conditions in Texas.
Now, Attorney General Holder says he's using different parts of the Voting Rights Act and not the pre-clearance part, but the binding elements of it.
I understand he's making that argument, but he needs to go back and read the decision. The majority in that decision made it very clear that when Texas was included for pre-clearance, that it was based on demonstrated discrimination and efforts to prevent minorities from voting, and that is no longer the case. That the test of the Voting Rights Act is, are there presently roadblocks in place or efforts to discourage minorities from voting? And the court made it very clear from a number of different pieces of evidence and a number of indicia that that is not the case. So Holder's trying to create law where there is not law.
Well, that's what the courts will decide with Holder in Washington, D.C., bringing this suit against voter ID. Will it have an impact on the Texas primaries?
I'm not sure what the impact will be at this point. The primary season begins with early voting in mid-February, with the primary being March the 4th. So it's difficult to know. I don't know how far the case will go. I don't know if a court, federal court, would attempt to somehow change our voting dates or change any of our processes. You know, I would hope courts would allow us to go forward with current law, both state and federal, and allow the primaries to be held on the 4th of March and allow our voter ID law to be in effect at that time. Listen, it's not a burden to go get an ID. You have to have an ID to get a book out of the library. You have to have an ID to pick up a prescription for medicine. You need an ID for a number of things, and this seems to be a reasonable requirement.
So you are comfortable with the Texas voter ID law as it is existing today?
From my understanding of it, the legislature went to great lengths to craft it in such a way that it would survive scrutiny, and I believe that it is carefully tailored to accomplish a legitimate state goal and withstand a challenge. Yes, I do believe that.
What about the college ID is not usable for voting?
Well, the ID that you can get, if you don't have a driver's license, the ID that you can get, I think, is readily available and easy to achieve. So I won't address specifically the concept of a college ID, because I don't know what criteria that colleges use to give an ID, but I think it's relatively easy to go get the ID that you need in order to vote.
That's one of the criticisms that people have, that that was targeted by some people not to be used as a legitimate ID for voting, because college students have been trending to vote for the Democratic Party. And things like a concealed handgun ID would be acceptable, but not a college ID.
Well, I think the rationale behind that is it should be an ID that's been issued by an organization that tests efficiently your identity, who you are. In the case of a CHL, my goodness, you have to go, first of all, you have to supply them with copious paperwork about yourself. They do a background check on you. You also provide them with your driver's license, or they can use, if I have a CHL, they can use a picture from your driver's license. So clearly, I think that ought to suffice, because that, in fact, requires more evidence of your citizenship and ability to vote than just getting your driver's license. So I think that's why people would be uncomfortable with an ID from issued by a college. It needs to be from a source that is believed to be sufficiently robust in their investigation of your claim that you're deserving of an ID and as a citizen to go vote.
Barry Smitherman is the chair of the Railroad Commission, which oversees the state's oil and natural gas industry. He is seeking the Republican nomination for Attorney General, and he's critical of the U.S. Department of Justice's challenge to Texas voter ID. Earlier this week, the Dallas County Commissioner's Court voted to fight the voter ID bill in court. They decided to join Congressman Mark Vesey, a Fort Worth Democrat, in his lawsuit, urging a federal district court to issue an injunction against the voter ID law. Vesey brought the lawsuit under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act and also claimed violations of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
You know, we have filed a lawsuit in Corpus Christi to basically stop the implementation of the voter ID law. We have some big problems with the voter ID law. One of the problems that I have with it is that three-judge panel and a three-judge Republican majority panel ruled that the Texas voter ID law violated the Voting Rights Act. And that's a huge problem. The state
state's own data, the Republican Secretary of State's own data shows that people would be discriminated against and be disenfranchised if this law were implemented. And so, you know, being a good Texan, you know, we want everyone to be able to go and vote. And so we need to try to stop a law from being implemented that would basically be legal disenfranchisement. It's wrong, and we all need to work together to come up with good solutions that encourage everyone to vote.
Well, one of the people that has been cited as someone who would be disenfranchised is Floyd James Carrier. He's a physically disabled African-American veteran who,
right,
despite his services to the country, he lacks the photo identification, and then he wouldn't be able to vote.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And there are a lot of people like that, that maybe they have a disabled veteran's ID. Maybe they have a school ID. Maybe they were born by midwives, as we say in Dallas and Fort Worth. Maybe they were born down in the country, and they were born in East Texas or somewhere down in Central Texas, and they were born in the country, and they don't necessarily have access to the proper documents to get new and updated IDs, and they don't necessarily have the money to for the right lawyer to help them gain access to the same sort of documents that all that many of us find easy getting every day. And going back to some of the darkest times in United States history, where poll taxes and literacy tests were used to bar minorities from voting, this voter ID law, in my opinion, does that. And the gentleman that you cited earlier is people like that that would be affected and would find themselves wishing they could go and vote, and they would find themselves upset, but they just would not be able to go and vote.
So some say that a college ID is not adequate because colleges aren't secure in the way that they identify their students.
Yeah, I just find that absolutely, you know, absurd that they say that. You know, again, state universities have an obligation to make sure that the IDs that they are issued to the people that they say that they're being issued to. When parents send their kids off to our state universities, they expect them to be safe. They expect the police, if there's an incident on campus, to be able to adequately identify people. So if these trained law enforcement officers, if the IDs are good enough for them, then again, why can't they be good enough for someone who is going to vote and for a election judge? I don't understand the logic behind that. It makes no sense.
Well, you do have to prove who you are when you apply for school. There are these transcripts.
Absolutely.
And that little black mark that's going to follow you for the rest of your life because you did something in third grade. It's all there.
Right, yeah, it's all there.
Governor Rick Perry and Senator Ted Cruz, many of the leadership of Texas, Republican leadership of Texas, are saying that Eric Holder is trying to do an end run around the U.S. Supreme Court, and he doesn't understand the Shelby County decision that the Supreme Court delivered, which they say means that Texas shouldn't have to deal with the Voting Rights Act anymore.
No, I disagree with him. I say that Eric Holder is doing exactly what Robert Kennedy did when Southern legislatures and Southern attorney generals wouldn't step up in places like Mississippi and Georgia in the 1960s to protect the voters in those states, minority black voters in those states.
Congressman Mark Vesey is a Fort Worth Democrat and has filed a lawsuit asking a federal district court to issue an injunction against the voter ID law. Republican Senator Ted Cruz also released a statement regarding the Department of Justice's decision to sue Texas over voter ID. In it, he said, quote, "Today's decision by the U.S. Department of Justice to sue Texas is sadly only the latest manifestation of the DOJ's increasing politicization under this administration. The U.S. Supreme Court has expressly held that voter ID laws are constitutional, and DOJ's decision today to attack Texas' voter ID program is contrary to law." Earlier this week, Cruz faced some hecklers in Dallas as he urged conservatives to demand their lawmakers to vote to defund Obamacare. KERA's Shelley Koffler reports the push comes as Cruz is increasingly mentioned as a likely presidential candidate in 2016.
In just 6 weeks, Americans, Texans included, will begin signing up for the new health care exchanges created under the Affordable Care Act, often called Obamacare. Congressional Republicans have held numerous votes to weaken or do away with the health plan, and they've failed. But Senator Cruz told some 1,600 conservative activists packed into a hotel ballroom, there's still time to act.
Now is the single best time we have to defund Obamacare.
The town hall felt a lot like the Tea Party rallies that fueled Cruz's Senate victory. Striding back and forth across the stage, shirt sleeves rolled up, no tie, Cruz urged the crowd to sign a defunding petition and to light up the phones of their elected representatives.
There is nothing that scares elected officials more than hearing from their constituents. And let me tell you, liberty is never safer than when politicians are terrified.
The Dallas event was part of a week-long cross-country tour organized by the political arm of the Conservative Heritage Foundation. Cruz and event organizers are calling for congressional Republicans to pass a bill that continues funding all of the federal government beyond September, except Obamacare. Cruz says it would then fall on Senate Democrats and the president to decide if they want to reject the funding bill and allow the government to shut down. Several audience members stood at different times to challenge the senator.
Hold on, ma'am, feel free to speak.
Rhonda Bowman told Cruz she's a diabetic who couldn't afford her medication when her husband lost his job and the family health insurance.
My insulin and my neuropathy medicine cost about $2,000 a month, and I could not get that, so I had to resort to going to Mexico to get my medicine.
Bowman says she voted for Cruz, but wants to know how he's going to help 6 million Texans without health insurance.
I want to know that he's going to take care of people that work.
It turned out Bowman was recruited by the Texas Organizing Project, which supports the expansion of Medicaid coverage under Obamacare. Gabriel Pedrera was part of the protest they staged outside.
No health care! No peace!
If you listen to Ted Cruz and you read the Heritage Foundation's talking points, there seems to be survival of the fittest. It seems to be a form of social Darwinism, which says to working families, if you're not rich enough to have health insurance, you're on your own.
Before he heads back to Washington, where the defunding effort will be tested, Cruz will travel to New Hampshire, home of the first presidential primary. Recent road trips to Iowa and South Carolina make it pretty clear he's weighing a run for president, and no doubt hoping his anti-Obamacare message impresses a big national audience. Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
Cruz has only been second to Governor Rick Perry in being a vocal opponent to the Affordable Care Act. But now Perry has some explaining to do after a report on Politico.com said that Texas was in talks with the Obama administration to bring some Obamacare money to the state. That money is from the Community First Choice Program, which was created with the passage of the Affordable Care Act and helps Medicaid cover at-home care for the disabled rather than putting them into institutions. Perry denied that he wants the money, and he denied that the program is part of Obamacare. But there's no denying that the program is needed in Texas. Susan Murphy is the Senior Policy Specialist for Disability Rights Texas.
Disability Rights Texas is a legal services firm. We are designated as the protection and advocacy entity for the state of Texas, and we protect and advance the legal service and human rights of Texans with disabilities.
So a program called Community First Choice, that's a newly created program under the Affordable Care Act that was being talked about as something that would have been very beneficial for Texans with disabilities, right?
Well, it's an option that states are considering and states are applying for to provide some very basic attendant and habilitation services so that individuals can be served in the community and avoid more costly institutionalization. So it is a program that is not currently created in our state, but one that our state can create.
I bet there'd be a lot of people that would be thrilled to have this support.
Yes, that's true. We have tens of thousands of people on waiting list for community services. Some of them have been waiting as long as 10 years, and so having access to this would be a very cost-effective service and save the taxpayer money so they do not end up without services and have their conditions worsen and get admitted to a long-term care facility or a state-supported living center, which is a very expensive and not as good an option for the individual.
So do we know if Texans are going to get this, if it's going to happen?
We won't know until and unless there is a submission of a request for this and if the federal government approves it. What I am aware of is that there's been a lot of dialogue during the course of setting the rules and regulations on it, and those rules and regulations have not been final very long. And now as states are putting forth their plans on how they would like to use it, there's still a lot of ongoing dialogue between the states and the federal government about how it could work.
The issue for some is that it was created under the Affordable Care Act. If we were able to bring it to Texas and help out so many people that could use this, then there's that problem that people don't want to call it, you know, that an Obamacare thing.
Well, the number of people that it can benefit is probably around at least 12,000. Those people are not going to get access to Medicaid because they access that service. They will only get access to the service if they have Medicaid. So it's a little bit different than some of the other proposals that have been considered and either accepted or rejected.
But wouldn't it be great if we could just not worry about the labels of Obamacare and all that stuff and just figure out what works for people and what's available for people and politics getting involved here?
It is true that what we value is finding out what works for people and, you know, helping them access that in a timely manner. And so, you know, having an opportunity to create something and fill a gap in the service system is the most important thing. For us, it's not the funding stream that gets us there that's the critical thing, but the fact that we're serving people with disabilities in our state.
So are y'all able to speak to folks in the governor's office, or do we know if they are working on to bring this?
Well, as you know, the legislature just passed a bill related to this. It was Senate Bill 7 in the most recent regular legislative session. So, you know, I think everybody was aware that there was this unmet need for basic rehabilitation services, basic attendant and rehabilitation services. The legislature approved it, and, you know, the governor's office did not veto it. So, you know, to recognize that this important service for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities is needed and now authorized, I think people recognize that throughout the process.
But still, we don't know if this we're going to be able to take part in the Community First Choice program from the federal government.
Well, no state knows until they've submitted an application, and then the federal government, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, reviews that and approves it. And usually there's quite a bit of dialogue with anything related to Medicaid between the states in terms of what the state intended and what the federal government will finally approve.
Do you know if Texas has submitted that application?
I do not know if they have officially submitted the application.
But there was some talk about doing so.
We think that they expect to do so, yes.
Susan Murphy is the Senior Policy Specialist for Disability Rights Texas. The organization was working with state officials on crafting an application for funding from the Community First Choice Program, which is part of Obamacare. It helps Medicaid cover at-home costs for the disabled, but now Texas may not be applying for the federal funds because it doesn't want to be seen as getting cozy with Obamacare. This was supposed to be the week that the Texas Department of Transportation was going to start tearing up some select state roads and turn them into gravel roads. The issue was money for maintenance. Because of the increased truck traffic caused by the Texas energy boom in South and West Texas, the roads needed a lot of repair, but TxDOT says it doesn't have the funds, and tearing up the roads was their solution. State Senator Carlos Yoreste, working with impacted county judges, is looking for another solution.
Well, as you know, TxDOT had made a decision a few weeks ago that they were going to convert approximately 83 Texas highway miles, farm-to-market roads, to gravel. And that was not received very well by myself and some of my colleagues and certainly by the county officials from my district in South Texas. So we had a meeting on Tuesday with the executive director of TxDOT, Phil Wilson, and I invited county judges and commissioners from my area. Senator Zaffarini was present and some others. And after a couple of hours of, you know, some very good discussions, and I'll submit to you that probably should have been done, well, that should have been done, you know, before that decision was made. But nonetheless, the executive director, Mr. Wilson, agreed to a 60-day moratorium on the conversion of these roads.
Now, many of these roads that were being torn up from a pavement into gravel were in South and West Texas. Most of them are in your district.
That's correct. A lot of the roads that have been identified are in my district. Some are in Senator Hagar's district and Senator Zaffarini's district.
And there was some speculation that this was being done as a power play by TxDOT in order to motivate the legislature to take funding TxDOT a little bit more seriously.
And I don't know if that's the case, but if it were, someone forgot to tell them that the session had already ended, and so had the three special sessions. Whereas, you know, we fought very hard, and I was one of those that advocated quite a bit for additional funding for TxDOT. My bill was able to get $225 million into the county roads. That had never been done before. The state of Texas historically does not fund county roads, and I was able to get and convince my colleagues to fund, you know, those monies for county roads. And in addition to that, the constitutional amendment that we passed out of the legislature, the voters still have to approve, you know, to put another infusion of over $1 billion out of the rainy day fund into transportation. Well, the $225 million, if the constitutional amendment passes, then it would be a diversion of monies from the rainy day fund into transportation that would be ongoing. Part of the problem with that, though, is that amendment will not be presented to the voters, not this November, but November of 2014. So that's a long way to go, as you know, given the needs that we have in Texas, coupled with everything going on both in the Permian Basin and in the Eagle Ford Shale.
State Senator Carlos Yoreste is a San Antonio Democrat. He's looking to keep TxDOT from turning state paved roads into gravel roads due to the lack of maintenance dollars. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. We like getting those emails about the program, so send them to texasmatters@tpr.org. Or you can just comment directly on our website at tpr.org. That's also where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs. Texas Matters can also be heard on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.